Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That's right. Women can propose to men today. That is right. Great story, Jen. I forgot about that.
They made a movie about that a couple of years ago with Amy Adams, I think, was a star in that.
Why do I sense that Amy Adams had a long line of people who wanted to ask her?
I can understand that.
I mean, seriously, why would she have to ask somebody? All right.
Talk about the girl next door personality and look. That's what Amy Adams always portrays to me.
Okay. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. It's all about you, the customer, to them. Customer service means everything. Whether it happens to be getting you the best insurance that fits what you need at exactly the price that fits your budget, if there's a claim, they act as if it happened to them. And they go right to it because they know how important it is to you. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Lyle around to the right point, into the lane for the right. Throws in the left corner. Williams shoots a three. Williams, bullseye!
That's big.
11 for Cam Williams, 66-62 Ohio State.
Two good friends there on that call, Paul Keels and Ronnie Stokes from Ohio State. Ronnie, by the way, just became a grandfather recently. Good for Ronnie. I was really, Ronnie, it's the greatest feeling in the world. So that's Paul Keels. We've had Paul on the show how many times? I mean, a lot. And Ronnie's great. And Skip Miles, like the Ohio State crew is a great crew.
Wish I had great Paul guys. Keel's voice. Man, does that guy have a set of pipes. I mean, really, listen to this.
Lyle around to the right point, into the lane to the right. Throws in the left corner. Williams shoots a three. Williams, bullseye!
I mean, come on. He makes it unfair for the rest of us.
He's terrific. He does a great job, and he's a great guy. Man, I'll tell you, Paul's one of the nicest guys out there going. The same thing with Ronnie. I really like Ronnie a lot. And Jim Lachey, who works football with him. Jim's awesome. So, yeah, their crew is a really, really great crew. Ohio State won yesterday, beat Iowa. Ohio State is an interesting team. You put them at home, they play really, really well. You put them outside of the shot at Value City Arena, they struggle. I'm not so sure they're not a first-round exit in the Big Ten tournament. And they've also lost for the season their best player, Jayshon Tate. Yesterday was their first game with Adam. You're playing at home. You're playing Iowa. There's an emotion to try that you overcome that. Then usually there's a settling after that. So Ohio State, with all due respect to them, because I think Thad Mott has done a great job, I put them on the buyer beware list at the moment because they can't play tournament games at home. We'll talk about Patrick Chambers in a moment and Penn State basketball in a moment. We'll bring in Matt Leon. We're just talking about the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament where I think, Kevin, is it your goal this year to get a hole-in-one?
Well, it's my goal any year.
The guy that's the GM of the Spike, Scott Walker, is playing in the Coaches versus Cancer Tournament last year in the 14th hole in the White Course, downhill. He got a hole-in-one. It was the only par three in the course without any prizes.
Oh, that hurt.
That stinks. But he did it, though. He did it.
The only thing that could be worse, Steve, is if nobody was looking when he did it.
Well, he was playing for a team, so he had four other people watching at the time, which is cool. Matt Leon's had eight hole-in-ones in his career. Matt, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Absolutely. I am the king of mini golf, I'll tell you that.
Yes, you are. Nobody can read the clown's nose like you can.
Absolutely. They haven't made a course I haven't conquered yet.
So what's the big story down there today?
Well, a little disappointment. Villanova, as expected, falls out of the number one slot in the polls, but didn't fall far. I mean, you know, losing to Xavier, that's not a bad loss at all, especially on a road game, in a revenge game for Xavier, where they had something to prove after just getting hammered up at the Pavilion. So they fall a couple of spots, but I think people now more focused. The polls are nice, but now it's about getting that number one seed, and I think Villanova is right in line still, barring anything further happening that we don't see, of getting a top seed in the NCAA tournament.
When they played Xavier, I watched the game, and the one thing I noticed, it was typical of how Villanova loses a game. It's rare, but it's typical how they do. They couldn't hit three-point shots. I mean, that's what the shot means to them. It means everything in terms of winning and losing.
Yeah, they're built that way. And, you know, not that there are a lot of teams that can give up 90 in college basketball, but, you know, they struggled. They walked into a hornet's nest. I mean, that place was rocking from the beginning. And, I mean, like I said, Xavier was embarrassed at Villanova there on New Year's Eve. So that was a game you just kind of knew that it was going to be a difficult, difficult matchup. And all that being said, didn't play particularly well on the road in a revenge game situation. Lost by 7, not the end of the world. So but like you said, you're right. You know, you look at the constant thread when they've lost big games, not just this season, but really during the last few years. It's days when they really, really struggle from the perimeter.
Does it wear on them that they haven't been to the Final Four since 9? Is this one where they've got to really kind of conquer a mental part as well as whomever's in front of them?
It's possible. You know, these things start to become a thing when you haven't done. We kind of see the same thing with Fran Dunphy at Temple, the lack of he's done everything you could possibly want to do as a college basketball coach. But he has struggled in the NCAA tournament. And if you look at, you know, Villanova, they did get that Final Four. But since then, you know, even some of the wins they've had in the tournament have been uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They've struggled with teams they shouldn't struggle with. And then they've lost in the second round or earlier. So you don't hear much talk about that with them, but, of course, you will start to hear it now as the NCAA tournament gets closer, and especially if they get the number one seed, I can almost guarantee what will be the first question, you know, once the field is announced. You know, right. Is there any pressure on this team to put a run together after what's happened the last few years? So, but we'll see. I mean, they're very good, and, boy, are they fun to watch when it's clicking. They really are.
I'll tell you, another team that's fun to watch is St. Joe's, especially with the Bember kid who's played so well. How much run are they getting in the city right now based on what Phil's been able to put together? Because they would be in the field today.
Oh, they've gotten a lot, and it's really built. Because I think most people, myself included, coming into the season, thought this was going to be a one-bid city. I mean, you knew Villanova was going to go to the NCAA tournament coming into the campaign. But after last year, when St. Joe's was mediocre at best, and Temple probably could have gotten a berth last year, but they missed out, and I don't know if people had sky-high expectations for Temple. People have been pleasantly surprised with how much fun the college basketball scene's been overall this year, and St. Joe's has been a great story. I mean, everybody knew about the Bembry kid even last year when they didn't do much. He put forth phenomenal numbers. One of the things that allowed them to transcend from a good to a great team at this point is Isaiah Miles, who's actually been leading the team in scoring much of the season and rebounding, and, you know, him and Bembry have just kind of gone back and forth numbers-wise. It gives them two A players out there on the court, takes all the pressure off of Bembry that he has to do everything offensively, which is what you kind of felt last year. And an underrated thing with St. Joe's, they get great point guard play. They get great point guard play, and that helps set everything up, and they're going to be tough. They're going to be tough, and, you know, Phil's put together a couple runs in the tournament, as we know, so it'll be interesting to see. I was actually, the loss to Davidson last week, I'm sure, or a couple weekends ago, hurt, but I would think by now they would start to get ranked at the bottom of the poll. I'm kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as if the Atlantic 10 is out of teams as well. I mean, there's some depth in the conference. St. Bonaventure right now, according to some people, would be in the field.
Yeah, and that's who the Hawks play them on Wednesday night. Right. And one of their losses was to St. Bonaventure at home. So a lot of attention on that game that, And Phil Martelli was quick after the game when they beat St. Louis yesterday to say that it's not a revenge game against St. Bonaventure because St. Bonaventure was the better team that night. But that's one to keep an eye on.
And right now, Jerry Palm, not Joe Lenardi, color analyst for St. Joe's, by the way. Jerry Palm has St. Joe's as an 8 seed, and according to him, they'd be in Brooklyn to take on Wisconsin. That would be a whale of a game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It'd be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a fun March. I really think that. It's very interesting in the city. You've kind of got Villanova, St. Joe's Temple, which has kind of taken off, and it's just been a really tough year for LaSalle and Drexel, and Penn's kind of in rebuild mode under Steve Donohue. So it's very much haves and have-nots for the most part this season.
Yeah, Steve Donohue will get Penn going. He coaches beautiful offense, and he is, I think, you know, you're going to see Penn be a factor. Yale right now is the best team in the Ivy, I think.
Have you seen Yale play by any chance?
Yes, I have.
That Justin Sears kid is phenomenal.
Yep. I think they've only lost one game in the Ivy this year, and I saw them play a game on TV, I think in the last 10 days against, I want to say Columbia. And Columbia is pretty good, and Yale was just really impressive.
Yeah, no, that Yale's a special team this year. What would it be, the first time for them in the tournament since, like, 1962, which
62.
That sounds amazing.
Yep, 1962 would be the first time. And Temple would be 11 in Jerry Palm's seating right now. Now, in the American, obviously, there'll be no SMU in the tournament. I saw SMU twice out in Las Vegas. Can flat-out play without question. But without them there, I think that really gives, that's a real advantage for Temple having SMU out of this thing and opens a door for them.
I think it helps and it hurts. I agree. It helps. I think it raises the odds that they can win the tournament, get the automatic bid. If there is no automatic bid, I think it hurts because you don't have the opportunity to get another win over SMU on your resume if you were to get them in a, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, in a second round and say you lose in the final or something like that.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Temple may have done enough, though, where if they make the final, I think they've done enough to get in.
No, I would agree. I would agree.
Yeah, and then he has them against Dayton in the opening round.
Pretty good Dayton team.
A good Dayton team that's faded a little bit the last 10 days, which I find is interesting. Dayton has actually had a couple of losses the last 10 days, so there's been a little bit of fade with them. Do you do a bracket, and how well do you usually do with your bracket?
I do, and I usually am terrible by the. Well, let's see. What time it starts Thursday at noon, so usually by dinner time I'm done.
Everybody's like that now.
Yeah.
You know, look, it's always the guy that fills out 350 brackets that emerges. And if you're going to fill out 350 brackets, I really don't want you sitting at my table.
That's the truth. Let's find a hobby there, Slim. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Find a life here, man.
I won a pool one time filling out just one bracket. Your UConn won it back with Kemba. You know, I was the only one in my pool to pick UConn that year. So, I mean, it's possible.
If Penn State had beaten Temple,
one of my few good years in picking,
it was Penn State, San Diego, then would have been San Diego State. If they got through that, it would have been
Temple
UConn in the Sweet 16.
Temple took them to double overtime, San Diego State. So Penn State could have potentially played UConn.
Yeah. So that was 5 years ago. five years ago, out in the desert, and that was Penn State Temple. Let's do a pod system. Let's send the two of them to Tucson. Fabulous.
Okay, really.
Somebody, again, explain the pod thing to me one more time. All right. Hey, Matt, thanks, bud. Always great to talk hoops or anything with you.
Thanks a lot, sir. Have a good one.
Matt Leon, KYW Philadelphia. Kevin jumps in with his complete bracket in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth.
The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Hi, this is Adam from the Purdy Insurance Agency. Shopping for home and auto insurance today can be time-consuming and stressful. And if you work in the education, medical, or emergency services professions, your life is stressful enough. That's why we've teamed up with this Selective Insurance Company to offer discounts to these professionals. So the next time you're shopping your insurance, give us a call at 800-677-2478 and let us take the stress out of the insurance buying process. You work hard educating and caring for our community, and we're working hard to get you the coverage you need at a price you can afford. So go ahead, give us a call, or check out our newly designed website at purdyinsurance.com.
Since 1925, Purdy Insurance Agency is the name you know and trust for all your personal and business solutions. From individuals to large corporations, Purdy Insurance provides the experience and know-how to get the job done for you. Call Purdy Insurance today at 1-800-677-2478 or visit purdyinsurance.com. Purdy Insurance Agency, what can we do for you?
All right. As I said earlier, today's show, by the way, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. As I said earlier, I don't really care too much about yesterday's game. It is what it is. They're just playing great. Nobody's gone in there and played them well. Indiana wins the Big Ten championship in the regular season. And in the last 2 weeks, they got crushed by this team. Simple as that. You're talking about a team that is fighting for the Final Four. Penn State is not fighting for the Final Four. Patrick Chambers knows what the numbers are, right? He knows what the numbers are. You know, you go 4-1 in a five-game stretch, and the opponent attempts 110 free throws, and you attempt 68. Really? Mike DeCourcy, who does a great job for the Sporting News, and I've known Mike for 35 years. I have tremendous respect for him. Not a little bit of respect, tremendous respect for Mike. Mike said yesterday after the game, look, he says, better teams have better players, and better players don't foul as often. Better players don't foul as often. He's absolutely right about that. Look, you're a little bit quicker, you can jump higher, whatever. But, you know, so there are reasons why you're a better player. Except here's the one hole in that theory. Brandon Taylor is one of the top 10 players in the league this year. It's an exclusive club with 16.5 points and 6.5 rebounds a game. Hey, we are not talking about one of the bottom-rung players of the league. We're talking about Brandon Taylor. Brandon Taylor spends about 50% of his time out in the perimeter and about 50% of his time in the post. I think that's a fair evaluation about where he is. And when he gets the ball in the post, almost every team, the second he touches the ball in the post, what do? They double him. So he's got two defenders on him being aggressive with him. Sometimes they don't foul, sometimes they do. But in the last six games, including yesterday, Brandon Taylor has attempted 13 free throws. And because of the fouls, was knocked out of the game yesterday. Eventually he fouled out, so did Jordan Dickerson, so did Donovan Jack. 17 of the first 23 fouls in the game were called against Penn State. Okay. Did Penn State commit fouls? Yeah. Did Michigan State not commit fouls? Not so sure. But they're a great team, and I'm not going to take anything away from them. The final part that threw Patrick over the top was a play near the low block down the court from me. I could see the ball was going in there, so I went and I looked at it right away as the ball's about to enter. I thought they were going to call a foul on Davis, similar to the foul on Marvin Clark that had been called 2-3 possessions earlier. That's what I thought it was going to be. That's what it looked like. Bo Borowski was standing on the baseline about 5 to 10 feet away from the play. He made no call. I have absolutely no issue at all with no call on that play. The only two things to me it could have been would have been a foul on Davis or a no call. And either one was perfectly fit in perfectly with what I saw. If they just played on, there was no call, I wouldn't even have thought twice about it. Wouldn't even have thought twice about it. So a no call, perfectly fine, because again, they would have gone through. I wouldn't have even, even given it a second glance. Instead, an official on the opposite side of the court, 35 to 40 feet away from the play, calls a foul. Offensively. Huh? What? Again, on that particular play, I can tell you in no uncertain terms, you need to have, in a game, coaches, players, broadcasters, and officials. It is really important in all four areas that each one of the four entities has a feel for the game. Coaches have to have a feel for what's going on. Players absolutely have to have a feel for what's going on. We as broadcasters have to have a feel for what's going on. And the officials have to have a feel for what they see. On that particular play, no feel. There was no feel for the game on that play. None. I'm sure if he wants to argue with me about it, he can, but I can tell you right now, I'm sitting right there. All right. You can't stand where you're standing and tell me you had a feel for the game on that play 40 feet away. No. Then he teed up Patrick, which Patrick deserved to get teed up. If you're a top echelon official that has a real feel for the game, you walk away. Now, Patrick wasn't walking away. Believe me, Patrick earned both his two tees. But you know what? He's right. And about a lot of things here.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us today. Show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have done a great job over the years of taking great care of their customers. Best service, price, right insurance. There's a claim. Oh, my goodness. They act as if it happened to them. It's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Cube, with 11 to 15, Emmels Wharf. Kevin driving another great vehicle this week.
A Rio 5-door from Kia. This is a perfect vehicle with the gasoline direct injection. They call it GDI engine. Gets a little bit more power, but it doesn't use as much gas. That's why you're looking at gas mileage as high as 37 highway, but average about 32 a gallon. And right now, you can get this perfect vehicle for commuting back and forth to work or short little trips or grocery store runs or places, things like that, or the shopping malls. You can get this vehicle for under $15,000 thanks to the discounts that are available at Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And get this, Steve, 2.9% financing, 66 months, brings it to $265 a month. That is a perfect price if you have a college-bound student this summer and you want to make sure they have a reliable car with a 5-year, 60,000-mile warranty from Sunbury Motors Kia. They have a lot of them to choose from and a lot of different options to choose from. The Rio 5-door from Sunbury Motors Kia.
Absolutely. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. We're going to have baseball for you tomorrow. 1 o'clock, Phillies, their debut, returning to WKOK. Have it for you at 1 tomorrow, and then the show right after that. The Red Sox today beat Boston College 6-0. I hope so.
Phillies were leading Eastern. Tampa Bay the last time I, or University of Tampa the last I saw, but I didn't see a final.
Whew. All right. Got to win those games. It just doesn't look good.
Let's see. The Phillies topped the U of Tampa. The final was 8-3 on Sunday.
Oh, thank goodness. And then tomorrow they open up here on WKOK at 1.
Alexander Nolan pitched, Nola pitched a scoreless inning. Small victories, small victories.
Well, some relief. Now let's talk about the Pirates camp for a moment. I'm going to bring in Adam Bittner from the Post-Gazette. Adam, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Let's start with Gerrit Cole. This is an interesting situation where the Pirates stay within what their budget plan is. And he's going to get $541. They actually offered him $538, but they forgot he received a $10,000 bonus last year for making the All-Star team. I mean, that's a natural mistake to make. What do you think about that situation and the fact that Scott Boras is his agent?
I think it's also interesting that it came out the day that he was named the union rep for the Pirates, replacing Neil Walker.
That's a good point.
You know, it's the type of thing that happens in a labor management situation in any workplace. You have that kind of give and take, and this is just playing out in a very public way. And I think it's being made into a bigger deal than maybe even Gerrit Cole would have wanted to make it. I think this is also the type of thing that players want to bring awareness to, is that the system is very unfair to, zero to three players like Gerrit Cole or like Mike Trout or Albert Pujols going back further. These guys who have had MVP and Cy Young caliber years, basically on entry-level contracts and haven't really had that pay off for them earlier in their careers. And I think what Gerrit Cole is doing is bringing attention to this as an industry, not even just as an issue for the Pirates. I think the unfortunate side effect for the Pirates is that it reinforces a lot of the negative stereotypes you have about this franchise. That they do operate on razor margins and that they don't, that they make big deals out of things like this where they shouldn't. So I think there are a lot of different things going on here that you can examine, both in terms of the Pirates' relationship with their players, but also in terms of baseball's relationship with its players.
There are a couple parts to this. Number one, let's not leave out the fact that the Pirates gave Cole an $8 million signing bonus. So that did happen. And the other part is Cole actually now that's the part where that works to Cole's advantage. Now let's be realistic. I think Cole was looking for, I believe, $650,000. Is what he was looking for. He was not looking for a multi-million dollar contract. He was actually looking for $650,000. That then enters into part of the, 19 games, which pitcher can you not go without? So do you think that drives, how far is Cole away now from getting out of this? 3 years? Does that sound right?
I believe he'll be arbitration eligible next year. I'm not exactly sure on that, but I believe if it's not next year, then it's definitely the year after that.
And that puts it 3 years from being a free agent.
Right.
He's not staying. All right. if that system works out. The Pirates, though, do talk about how they maintain a budget. From their perspective, how important is that part?
I think it's very important because I think, I think they enter every year, and I think this is an underrated part of their offseason. They enter every year leaving enough space for them to add to the team later on. Once those trends begin to set up after the first couple months of the season and you get a feel for where you are as a team, then people start to look at, what can you do to improve this team at the trade deadline? And I think a team that overinvests in, a small market team especially, that overinvests in the offseason, you know, really reduces its ability to react to things in season and say, you know, as the Pirates have recently, you know, let's go out and get a Justin Morneau who's not a cheap player. And, you know, some of those acquisitions may or may not work out. But, you know, it gives you room to maneuver once you actually see the group that you have on the field rather than just playing everything out on paper as you often do in the offseason.
Really good points, Adam. Really good points. Adam, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. The Olympics at a crossroads. Talk about it in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. You want to be insured by the best, and that's Purdy Insurance. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia is worth 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The Olympic movement has now hit a crossroads, and it has really not a lot to do with Rio de Janeiro. The IOC is fiddling while the Olympics burn. John Rennie Short is a professor of public policy for UMBC. He's written 38 books on globalization and urban issues, says the IOC has a monopoly with little incentive to change. They reap nearly all the benefits while insisting their host cities and governments literally sign documents to bear all the cost and risk. So the whole thing was always a bit of a cobble to begin with. But now, he says, now people aren't buying into it. For the 2022 Winter Olympics, five cities expressed interest. Three dropped out, including Oslo, Norway. Significant. We'll talk about that in a moment. Kevin, how much money was spent on the Sochi Olympics?
Oh, I'd have to look that up. I remember hearing it, though.
It's $41 billion.
I was going to say, it wasn't $100 billion. I know that.
It's $41 billion. During the process for the 22 Winter Games, five cities said, yes, we'd like to consider bidding. Only two did. Okay? John Ruffalo from The Guardian says, everybody's laughing about it except the people in Luzon, referring to the IOC headquarters in Switzerland. They don't realize that right now they are riding a, quote, dead horse. The specter of many of the world's major cities, Jeanette Howard's the one that put this from ESPN.com, put this article together. The specter of many of the world's cities, she writes, are balking at chasing the Olympics. Jacques Rocha back then said they need to streamline costs, scale down the game so host cities are not limited to wealthy metropolises. Well, oh, wrong. Athens spent $15 billion in 2004. The Olympics are blamed for ruining the Greek economy. Beijing spent $41 billion in 2008. Many of their Olympic venues have become nothing but nothing happens. Zero. Nothing. Kevin has repeatedly praised the London Olympics. They were a success, correct?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a financial success, but it was a success. Financial success may not be the same thing.
No, and it's actually the most important thing, all right, to this story. London was $15 billion over cost. Tokyo. They're going to get the 2020 Summer Games. They've already decided they can't afford the stadium. The plans were scrapped.
Well, this is the first sign that there's a serious issue.
This goes back to 2002. This is now a pattern.
No, hear me out.
This is 14 bad years
of what they're doing to local economies.
I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying at all. I'm saying there's what I see as a pattern here is you look at the next three Olympic Games, Pyongyang, Tokyo, Beijing. Not a single...
All going down the toilet.
Well, not a single country is anywhere outside of Asia, because Asia is the only place that wants to hold it right now.
No, it's more than that. Okay, China will just throw the money in there to throw the money in there. Okay, remember, who did they beat out?
Kazakhstan, right.
Everybody else dropped. All right, everybody else dropped.
You mentioned the budget for the 08 Summer Olympics was like, the spending was like $43 billion or something like that. I remember you saying.
Yep.
Their estimated budget is right around $4 billion for the Winter Games. What makes this about a tenth cheaper? I know there's not as many events in it, but a tenth of the cost?
They're going to spend $41 billion again. That's what they're spending again. They're spending it all over again, $41 billion. Norway, okay, here is Fredrik Jacobsen, chief political commentator for the Norwegian newspaper VG. Norway, quote, is a rich country. We don't want to spend money on the wrong things, like satisfying the crazy demands from IOC higher-ups. It's a familiar refrain. New York, Stockholm, Chicago, Istanbul, Boston, Hamburg all have said the same thing. We're not blowing money on the Olympics and sending ourselves into debt. The new long-term contract with sponsors and media companies, including a record $7.75 billion deal with NBC TV. Right? That's what the IOC points to. Really? They said the image is positive. Nobody would enter into such kind of an agreement if there wasn't a doubt on the image. Now people are doubting the image. After Dempsey's group helped turn public opinion against Boston's bid for 2024, activists in Hamburg reached out and paid him and his colleagues to travel to Germany to share tips. A month later, German officials were shocked when citizens there voted down a December referendum on Hamburg bidding for the 2024 Games. Opponents of bids in Rome and Budapest also have now reached out to Dempsey. Same story. We want to be clear that we're not saying that no city should host the Olympics, Dempsey stresses. What we do advocate is that cities considering a bid have a real pro and con conversation. Exactly. And it's definitely a trend when cities have that debate, they decide it's not worth it. The cost is too high. The risks, limitless. Every single Olympics has a cost overrun, and it's massive.
Steve, why do you think Los Angeles was so willing to jump in the bidding for 2024 Naive. Summer Games?
Naive.
I mean, this is a 15-0 vote by the city council.
Naive. Incredibly naive. California is not in great shape economically. As a state, they are deep in the hole. Why does Los Angeles now want to do this? Why? I mean, I would be leading the fight out there on the air to say, no, we don't want it here. And I love sports. I love it. Absolutely love sports. But you don't want to. You know, we're in a tough economic time around the world. Around the world where wasteful spending can't be tolerated. This is a waste. This is a waste. London, complete success from the outside. $15 billion in cost overruns. Do you think the British economy can afford to do that right now? I mean, Boston saved itself by pulling out.
Hamburg pulled out. I mean, a lot of these competitions now worldwide with FIFA. I mean, we just celebrated the U.S. Women's World Cup. The Women's World Cup, okay? And remember the players complained about playing on field turf in Canada? They were complaining. Unfortunately, what their complaints revealed was a huge problem. Canada was the only one that bid.
What is the major difference between now and the Olympics, let's say 40 years ago? I have my thoughts. I want to hear. My thought
cost.
Is venues.
Cost. It's all cost. Everything, you got to go out and get yourself a new velodrome. Well, the velodrome is a useless piece of junk when you're done. You think it's some, oh, yeah, we're all going to go ride our bikes. No, we're not. We're not going to use it. You know, it's not going to be a training ground. Everybody's got a training ground already. Okay, in China, all their Olympic venues are now junk.
Okay. There was a time, though, where you didn't have to build 17 venues and you just held it somewhere. But now we have to have a venue for everything. And I agree with you on that part completely. I think that it has gotten out of control and out of hand. Why do we have to have a special swimming pool for the Olympics? Why can't you have the pool that just happens to be there that's an Olympic pool?
But again, build it in one spot. Pick a point in the Alps and build the Winter Olympics. Okay? If you want to go to Athens, whatever, build a spot and have the IOC fund it from their funding and not have the country do it.
That's a good other question. How come the IOC doesn't kick any money into this? They're the ones that have the tons of sponsors, don't they?
Because they're FIFA with fewer letters. All right? IOC, FIFA, you know, same deal. All right? The word corrupt seems to be attached to them all the time. Build a spot. Have people show up. You don't have to spread it around the world. Build it and maintain it. You'd be shocked at how much less money that would cost. Build one Olympic site somewhere in the Alps for the Winter Games and build one, I don't know, pick one. Since the Athens is the birthplace of the Olympics, throw it there. But these aren't worth it. It's not worth it. The time of free spending by governments, local, state, and national, those days are dead. Okay? I would be one of the first individuals that would be on the air in California saying, I don't want a dime of my tax dollars going for a 2.5 week track meet. We got too many other important things to do in life than this, than to be fleeced by the IOC. I love the Olympic Games. I think they're great. But now they're out of control, and they've got to be stopped.